caught off guard there for a little bit. Didn't realize it was our turn. Is this our turn? Are we up now? Cool. We'll hear from Andy Reid, Willie Gay, Tershawn Wharton, and also Jalen Watson. It just says Watson, so I'm going to assume it's the Watson on the Chiefs and not Deshaun Watson or Jackson Heights' own Randale Watson.
Or John Watson to investigate why the Chiefs haven't added another edge rusher. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. What would the investigation be about? in investigating what the real reason for missing last week was for Orlando Brown.
You know. Ooh, that's good. I like that. Solving the mystery. Eh,
Watson over here sniffing around. So we'll hear from Andy Reid, Willie Gay, Turk Wharton, and Jalen Watson coming up out at St. Joe in Chiefs training camp. Still no word from the Royals on a roster move for today with Whit Merrifield and Cam Gallagher moved yesterday. They announced yesterday there would be a subsequent roster moves announced tomorrow morning, as in now this morning. There's 59 minutes left for the morning. So 2 hours and 9 minutes before they actually have to take the field and play a baseball game there in Chicago. So we'll see if it's Michael Massey or, you know, who do they go with three catchers still and they just bring up somebody else. We'll find out as the day progresses. 913-912-4810. We'll certainly talk a lot of Chiefs once the press conferences start. Haven't seen an update on if the Chiefs are still out at practice right now or whatever they might be doing. I know they're inside, so a little bit different than being outside and every single movement and things like that. So, but I do want to elaborate a little bit on the end of last segment when I said the trade deadline, it was, you know, a yes and a no for me with the simple question of did the Royals do enough in the mind of the fans. Specifically yesterday, my immediate reaction is no. But the overall movement for the Royals, I actually go yes. And the reason I say that is because I don't want to be someone who is going to talk out of both sides of the mouth in criticism for the Royals. Find a way to criticize them earlier, and then if they do something, find a way to then criticize them after. I had talked about for a while that, you know, the Royals in years of losing over the last 10 years, outside of 14, 15, and 16, and even throw in 17 as well. But they have had all these years that they have been losing. So 10, 11, 12, 13, 18, 19, 20, 21, and leading into this year. And I talked about the lack of trades, the lack of movement, the non-transactional team that the Royals were, and that they never really traded anybody before July. They had traded two players before July, and that was John Jay and Kelvin Herrera. That was it. Over all those years that they did not do that, they waited till the trade deadline and then ultimately didn't really make any big moves. Well, then they traded Carlos Santana before July. And so if I'm saying, like, come on, show that you are willing to move somebody when you feel like it's the right time. And they did that this year. One of the things we also talked about was the fact that the Royals do not trade players with team control left. They don't. And they don't really trade players that have value, you know, and value is a relative term. So what's
substantial value?
Yeah. But what's real? Like Carlos Santana, somebody might have said, well, that's a value because the Mariners needed him and French went down and look what he was doing in the previous month. And look what he then was doing for the Mariners. So there was some value to trading him. You can certainly say that. But I've talked about that, you know, the real value that's been there of players that have been traded before this year was a total of 8. Scott Podsednik, Kyle Farnsworth, Rick Ankiel, Jonathan Broxton, John Jay, Kelvin Herrera, Mike Moustakas, Trevor Rosenthal. Those are the players that were traded that had, quote-unquote, any value. And you know, said that to Les Norman. Les was like, John Jay, I don't know that I would throw him in. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying anybody that was having a decent year at that point. Because John Jay was a one-year signing and then traded in June. So he played 3 months with the Royals. The definition of rental, right? 4 of those 8 were closers. In Farnsworth, Broxton, Herrera, and Rosenthal. All of those players were done at the end of that year. 5 of the 8 that they traded were signings the previous offseason. Hmm. Pod Sednik, Rick Ankiel, Jonathan Broxton, John Jay, Trevor Rosenthal. None of them had team control left. So the fact that Emmanuel Rivera, whether you like him or not, had team control, could be an organizational guy. Whit Merrifield, obviously, with a couple more years left, team control. Cam Gallagher, nice defensive catcher. If MJ Melendez is going to be a guy that moves positions, you could use a guy like Cam Gallagher. Team control that was left, and moving some pieces that you felt like is there value to it. Benintendi, clear value. But he falls into the category of, you know, he was a rental player and was going to be a free agent. They weren't going to re-sign him. Whit Merrifield, there's some value. And there's that connection with the team over the course of his career and the years and years and years of them, along with Salvi, putting those two faces up, and Gordon until he retired, of sort of the Royals organization and team while they were going through bad seasons. Two-hit Whit, Whitley, you know, all of that, going to play every day. And one of those guys. And now they've moved on from him. So when I look at all of the players that they have traded at the trade deadline in June and July in those years, here are every one of those players. So if we're thinking about, were they more transactional this year? 10, 11, 12, 13, 18, 19, 20, 21. 8 years. Here are all the players. John Jay, Kelvin Herrera, Moustakas, Homer Bailey, Martin Maldonado, Terrence Gore, Jake Dykeman, Tim Hill, Brett Phillips, Trevor Rosenthal, Kelvin Gutierrez, Alcides Escobar, Danny Duffy, Jorge Soler. Those are all of the players they have traded at the trade deadline in 8 years. And this year it's Santana, Benintendi, Rivera, Merrifield, Cam Gallagher, and the number 35 pick in the draft. I think by that sense, if we're taking a step back and looking at what they've done in the past versus what we were hoping they would do overall this year in a fire sale when you felt like they should be trading bullpen pieces. And I'm on record as saying, look, I would have liked them to trade Barlow and Staalmont. Did they do enough? Yesterday, no. Because I believe there was a market for Barlow and Staalmont. I believe the Royals probably sat back and wanted a king's ransom. Therefore, they can go, we tried. But we didn't really have to make a trade that was like, ooh, this one hurts. We're losing Barlow, who we've got for two more years after this year and is our best bullpen arm for, you know, a team's number 11 prospect in their organization. So they move all those pieces. They just did it at different times. June 27th, July 27th, August 1st, and then the last two on August 2nd. They traded a guy who was their first baseman in Carlos Santana. They traded their everyday left fielder. They traded organizational depth at third base, who had played in 51 of the 80 games he would have been available for, started in those games. Whit Merrifield, an everyday player and a cornerstone of the organization in the last 5 years. And Cam Gallagher, a really good defensive catcher. They traded all those guys. And the number 35 pick in the last month. I think that's more transactional than what they have been in the past. Did they maximize the transactions? Probably not. I think they probably wanted more for Barlow and Staalmont than the actual market said they were worth, when they probably should have just simply done that, because they haven't done it in the past. And I would guess that Whit Merrifield traded last year would bring back more than what brought back yesterday with Taylor and Castillo.
Few things. One, the whole crew, Alec Lewis, Lynn Worthy, Annie Rogers, have all tweeted. The Royals have not made their roster moves yet, but Annie points out Michael Massey and Sebastian Rivero have lockers in the clubhouse this morning.
So that makes sense. So they are going to go the three catcher route.
And Michael Massey was not scratched yesterday for no reason.
Right.
Can I take a minute of your time, Jason, to bring you something that JJ Piccolo said about specifically the relievers?
And I want to hear it.
I'll unpack kind of where I'm at after that. No. I think you've made a lot of good points.
I absolutely want to hear this.
But I think this, for me, pushed me back over onto the side of, well, I'll tell you after the fact. Here's what JJ Piccolo said last night, talking about the reliever market, if they considered moving any of their arms.
Yeah, we considered everything. I think the nice thing about today is we didn't have anything that was extremely pressing where we felt like we had to move a player. We didn't have a contract on the books that didn't make sense for us next year or prohibited us from doing anything. We didn't have expiring contracts, and the players that you could imagine were asked for are very valuable to us. So when you have years of control and we start looking at 2023, we feel like we need to continue to address our bullpen. So to give up anything out of our bullpen would have made a lot of sense for us, because anybody that's being asked for has value to us as well. So we were willing partners and listeners, but also we're not extremely aggressive in trying to make a trade for anybody that we thought clearly makes our team or puts our team in a better position to start 23.
If I was
probably the last 15 seconds is what stands out there.
If I was standing, I'll give you something from the full minute. If I was standing on the fence with you a little bit, and I think you made a lot of good points about,
thanks.
Hey, you're
let's
welcome.
Take a break. We'll come
let's
back.
Take a break. Chiefs audio next. Looking at the entire
show's
scope
over.
Of this offseason or of the last month, I do think is absolutely fair. If they would have waited until yesterday to trade Carlos Santana, we'd think about it a little differently.
And Benintendi and
all of that. Absolutely. Yeah. The buzzwords you hear in that minute of audio, there are so many that I'm sure I missed some. There was nothing pressing. Mm-hmm. There was no one they had to move. There were no contracts either expiring or prohibitive for the future. These guys are valuable to the team. Years of control. 2023. Want to keep building on the bullpen. Of course they have value. That's why you would ask for something in return that could actually benefit the long-term view of your team. We didn't need to be aggressive. You should, because this all goes back to, though, and there's another clip later we can play if we want, about 2023. If they're making these moves because, these guys can help us in 2023, I don't care about 2023. And I didn't care about 2022 a year ago either, because the Royals have not shown us enough to prove that next year, ever, that next year will be the year. Not, I don't mean 23. I mean, anytime they say, well, next year we prove it. They haven't yet.
The Royals are the bar that has free beer tomorrow sign.
Yes. Yes. We're always, and we every day,
next
like
year.
Morons, 162 times we walk up and say, it's free beer today. That's tomorrow.
Every April or March down in Arizona, 1 year away. It's
next
a sign
year.
That next year is our year.
Next year's our year. It's never a numbered year, but it's always next year. Yeah. And I understand if you are ready to compete next year, you want to have guys that will help you compete next year. But why would I trust this franchise to have a good, to be able to look in the mirror and not have it be a funhouse mirror? Here's another analogy for the day. I feel like the Royals have all of their mirrors in Kauffman, must all be carnival mirrors, because every time they look in, they say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a part of a winning baseball team next year, and it's never true. You have something, Beards?
Yeah,
heard your mic turn on. I got nervous.
Yeah, I was going to say, it also feels like they just kind of did all the easy stuff, where it's like,
yes,
Santana sucks. We have to get rid of him because we've got Pasquantino. We'll move him. Everybody's knocking down our door for Benintendi. Fine, we'll do it. Witt threw us under the bus. Fine, we'll do it. And it was just all the easy stuff and nothing that was like, we trade this young guy that we like to get something that will help us later.
It's a great point, Beards. Some people were thinking about mentioning, love the segue, I appreciate it. That's, Beards never gave me a segue that good when it was just me and him working it. I don't know, the zones made him a different man. His eyes are open to baseball. They traded three guys in their last year of club control, a 33-year-old with his lowest value in years, who very obviously did not want to be here anymore, in a clubhouse just bursting with weird vibes, and Emmanuel Rivera, who they, I just think, see as a 4A player, which is what it is.
I see that as well.
It makes sense. That is a reasonable conclusion to come to. But if you're hoarding money, you've just got stacks of cash in your mattress or whatever, but you never spend any of it. You might be driving a crummy car. You might be, paying rent on a crummy apartment. You aren't ever buying nice gifts for anyone around you, but man, you've got that money because next year is going to be the year that you're finally going to start spending it. I don't know why I should buy that anymore about this team, and really, it's not even just my lack of faith in the long-term future. That can be partially Dayton, partially JJ, whatever. The thing that I am most just like personally over is how stale all of this feels. It's the same logic and the same type of moves and non-moves that have gotten us to where we are now. I would like to see them try something different, if for no other reason than to try something different. It just feels like the same old, same old.
Well, I will say that When he says, address the bullpen and it didn't make sense, and looking at 2023 and these guys that'll help the team and not extremely aggressive, all the things that you talked about.
Michael Massey is hitting seventh today, starting
awesome.
At second base.
There we go.
There you go. Michael Massey in the
Michael
starting
Massey lineup. Michael Massey is now hopefully going with the third base being traded away in Rivera. So maybe Lopez is playing third base.
Bobby Witt's at third today. And Nicky Lopez is at short.
Well, it's about damn time they make way for a shortstop there and move Bobby Witt off of his natural position of shortstop. What the hell? All right, never mind.
Mondesi rehab assignment? No, I don't know.
Whatever. Whatever, doesn't matter. He struggled yesterday at shortstop, so now he's lost the job, apparently. So that whole view of these guys will help us in 2023 to win, to me, is a trigger for a lot of Royals fans and analysts. Because it's been the same thing with why you don't trade Whit Merrifield last year or the year before and things like that. That Barlow or Staumont could have helped the team in 2023 by bringing something back. Now, they're the ones that know what the return was. They're the ones having the conversation. And maybe we would have looked at it and said, well, you traded Scott Barlow for somebody who wasn't even in the top 30 of their prospects in their organization.
Always a possibility.
Or were you just trying to give him away? Right. He was more valuable being on the team than just, you know, tossing him aside. That could be the case. I doubt it because he's got two more years of team control, does Scott Barlow. He would be pitching for a team in 23 and 24 after this year. They're not extremely aggressive is something that is frustrating because the Royals should be aggressive in calling people and trying to do those things, packaging players if that's the case, and try to bring something back. I hear all that. Absolutely.
They're just they always come off as so passive.
Yeah,
come
absolutely.
To us, blow us away, you can have a player on your way out, here's a goodie bag. It's very passive.
If not, okay, whatever. Then we'll stay with our guys. That's fine. But as I look at the entirety, and with the five players that were traded, and the draft pick that was traded, they got 12 players back, two that are on the big league club in Wyatt Mills and now Luke Weaver, 10 guys that are in the minor leagues, and with MLB Pipeline, MLB.com's updated rankings for the Royals, 1 through 30, they have number one Pasco Mancino and number two Nick Prado still. If you graduate them, which you should, so they have included these players in the Royals' top 30 without graduating Pasquantino and Prado, I'm going to go ahead and graduate them.
Seems fair.
That means, according to MLB Pipeline, the Royals acquired the number 6 prospect in the Royals organization now, the number 10 prospect in the Royals organization now, the number 11 prospect in the Royals organization now, the number 20, 21, and 26. And then four other guys that aren't ranked in the top 30, but like Alexander with huge power, Brent Rooker with huge power, feel like organizational guys. Kind of like a Ryan O'Hearn type player that you're at AAA, you're mashing, you come up to the big leagues, you're average, and you're filling in. And then when somebody better or off a rehab assignment, you get sent back down and you're with the organization for a number of years. Champlain, we'll see what he ends up being. Will Fleming, we'll see what he ends up being. But they got six guys that all rank in the top 26, 25 of the Royals' newest MLB pipeline top 30 rankings, including as high as number 6 with Drew Waters, including as high as number 10 with Beckway, 12 with Max Castillo, who they got yesterday for Whit Merrifield. Samad Taylor is number 21, TJ Sikkema number 20, and Andrew Hoffman number 26.
Here are my two things. First of all,
yes.
the 35th pick for Drew Waters, that and also Hoffman, that is a move that I can't imagine the Royals were passive on. I can't imagine that the Braves went to them and said, hey, can we give you these three guys for the 35th pick? That feels like a conversation that probably started from the Royals side of them wanting to do something with that pick.
Well, it was, I believe J.J. Piccolo, when he said that the Braves called them, that they weren't looking to move them, because that sounds right. With
it
how
just
they do business.
Seems impossible.
But the Braves wanting that, knowing they wanted that, the Royals did fight for Hoffman to be included in the deal.
So
it feels like Waters and Chandler Champlain were the moves.
Right.
Or excuse me, Chandler Champlain came from the Yankees.
Waters and Alexander.
It seemed like Waters
Hoffman
and Alexander And then the Royals were like, no, we want Andrew Hoffman. And so maybe they were a little more aggressive because Hoffman is, you know, a top 30 prospect or whatever. So there might have been that, but go ahead.
I'll give it, that's a good clarification. I'm dying to give them credit for that one is how I will frame it.
Okay.
So fair enough. The Braves show up at their door and then the Royals were still prepared to do something non-traditional for them. I'm dying to give them credit for that one. And the moves that they've made over this last month, I think are good. I do not think they are sufficient. And that is where my hang up with this team keeps coming from, which is you make these little adjustments, but when is there going to be an acknowledgement that we need to do more than the minimum, mm-hmm. or that we need to do something to make a substantial shakeup throughout this process? And so far, I just continue to be disappointed by watching guys get older and then eventually decline and then get traded or just walk when you eventually realize that their value has been so very much deflated as they have played baseball that never mattered. I very much still question what the Royals see in their own reflection.
The Chiefs have not stopped yet, so they're still practicing.
Sweet.
So I know, Beard, you want to go to break, but
get out of here.
I do want to add some context to it. Can we hear J.J. Piccolo talking about Whit Merrifield? Because I do think this is part of the conversation is if the Royals' schedule sent them to Toronto in late August as opposed to early July, and that issue never came up at the time, would we view the move of Whit Merrifield as that was the easy thing to do, was to move on from Whit Merrifield. Here's J.J. Piccolo weighing in on why now as opposed to years past for Whit, and then a follow-up on the vaccination status.
I think it's more of a reflection of where our organization is right now. There's depth coming from behind Whit that allows us a little more freedom to make moves moving forward. So I think that was a main contributor. The last couple of years, you know, we can call them transition years if we'd like to, but his versatility, whether it was second base, the outfield, all the things that he could do for us always allowed us to have flexibility to give opportunity to guys who are ready to play in the major leagues. And now we're at a point in our system with a lot of young players that the competition's getting tighter. And we just look to capitalize on a player that had value in this game. And we felt like we were able to do so today.
And follow up, just because it's gotten a lot of attention in the last couple of weeks since the All-Star break, did any of, you know, the comments with him regarding vaccine and playing for a contender, did that factor at all into decisions you guys made?
No, and I think our actions show how it did not. We could have probably moved Whit pretty quickly, but we felt like Whit's value was that we should wait to get the best return that we could. And it really came down to the last hour or so before we were able to land on a deal that we were happy with.
So there's JJ weighing in on Whit Merrifield. There's always the aspect of, okay, do you believe somebody when they're saying those things? Again, I believe JJ in the fact that the Braves approached them about pick number 35 because the Braves wanted more money to work with. I don't think the Royals were looking to move that pick. It is something that is out of the ordinary for them.
I can rescind my credit, though. That's fine.
That's fine. No big deal. And so I don't know what to believe in terms of if the Whit Merrifield comments made this more likely than it would have been to make the deal yesterday than if he had not made the comments, or if the Royals' schedule sent them to Toronto late August as opposed to, you know, before the All-Star break. Because if that were the case, in this hypothetical, in the hypothetical world of the Royals going to Toronto in August and not early July, and none of the players and none of the 10 players or whatever vaccination status never comes up, and they trade Whit Merrifield yesterday, is it viewed as the easy thing to do? Or is it viewed as, okay, they did trade somebody who they had a relationship and a connection with and who they haven't wanted to trade, and they don't want to make the kids with the 15, you know, number 15 jerseys around Kauffman Stadium upset, and the guy's around the club for a couple of more years and he's a leader in the clubhouse and he's answering questions after the game. Does it make it as easy as it sounds of like, oh, you just got to trade Whit now that he said that? Or is there truth in believability in J.J. Piccolo's words that it had no impact on the trade value of Whit Merrifield.
You know those are just Patrick Mahomes 15 Royals jerseys anyway.
That's a great point. That's a really good point, which will now be sold again at Rally. Now you throw those 15 Royals jersey with Mahomes on the back again.
I definitely don't think we are viewing it publicly the same way we view it now. Reckless speculation?
Yes, total.
I'm prefacing some reckless speculation. My reckless speculation is that the Royals or that clubhouse on some level knew this was a move that needed to happen, and then we found that out whenever he publicly said, I'll reconsider if we're going somewhere else, or if I'm playing meaningful baseball. I think that moved the public needle and absolutely moved our perception if that's the thing they had to do or not. It seems like there's been some, again, we've heard it from Dayton as much to say that this, like, the clubhouse has been weird. I think that this worked out just fine.
But if it was simply a
reckless speculation, hashtag not reporting.
Yes. If it was simply a, okay, the comments didn't matter, you know, even if he hadn't made those comments, it would still be something within the organization that they would say, you know, it's time to move on because of whatever might be taking place behind the scenes and fighting back against what the recommendation was and what the doctors were saying. This is the advice we're giving. These are the things we think you should do. You obviously have your choice to do that or not. Then the same would be true for Michael A. Taylor, who didn't say anything. He didn't have the words, but he's a guy who's under team control next year, and there was a market for him. Mark Feinsand said that. So if it was a, look, we got to move on from some of these guys because the locker room is odd, and, you know, Sam McDowell had the story about, you know, a player texting him saying there's a few of us that are pretty pissed off. You know, Dayton saying that he was disgusted at the commentary of Whit Merrifield. But without the commentary of Whit Merrifield, did it make it more likely than not the players who were not vaccinated going to Toronto then became more likely to be moved based on them not maybe listening to the leaders that say, this is what we think you should do, which is in the best interest of the club, but also here are the doctors, here are our trainers who you ask for advice on recovering from injuries and other things that are giving you the advice on this, and them not doing that? Because I think Taylor would be in the boat with Whit Merrifield, separating the comments from just simply the vaccination status.
But I think it's too important, the difference between who Whit Merrifield is versus who Michael A. Taylor is, to the team, of the team, to the fans,
including the commentary.
Yes.
Or just talking about vaccination status in general and doing his own thing at the behest of the organization.
No, I think it's very hard to divorce it from the specificity of the comments themselves. But I think I think if Whit would have just not been vaccinated and not been there, it definitely reformats the conversation. This still would have been the right move to trade him. They still should have traded him sooner.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't think that the Royals. I do believe to at least some extent what JJ says there. Because also, I mean, you talk about leadership in the clubhouse. They've employed Cal Eldred, which has continued to be an issue over the course of this entire year. And he wasn't in Toronto because he wasn't vaccinated. Right. And then he's the pitching coach. Like, you can talk about how much you want to urge your leadership to lead in that regard.
No, it's accountability.
That's a shortcoming.
It's about accountability, Josh.
But we will hold someone accountable eventually. Just got to figure out who that's going to be. I think that it is very, very difficult to divorce what Merrifield said from this move yesterday because it just sort of sounded like him saying goodbye.
Yeah. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we'll head out to St. Joe when the Chiefs wrap up practice. Andy Reid, Willie Gay, Jalen Watson, and also Turk Wharton.
Ooh, he had some good snaps against Trey Smith yesterday. That could be
interesting. Yeah, that's true. That was a fun little matchup. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Nah, because that gives us more time to sit on the bench and get our booties warm.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so we'll head up to St. Joe here in a second. They're done stretching, so we're going to hear from Andy Reid, Turk Wharton. We will hear from
Willie Gay Jr.,
and also Jalen Watson.
There it is.
Jackson Heights' own Jalen Watson. We'll hear from him as well the Chiefs wrapping up another day there in St. Joe, another practice. We'll hear from Mick Schaefer coming up in the 1 o'clock hour as well, and a number of football things that I still want to get into. And we have yet to start playing some of the 52 sound bites we have of clips that we can play of Vin Scully and different stories he has told on the air, off the air, calls, famous calls that he's had. In his just absolutely historic, amazing life in the sports moments he was not only present for, but was providing the voice and the soundtrack to these amazing moments in sports history that, you know, Hank Aaron's 715th home run, Joe Carter's walk-off home run, you know, in Toronto against Wild Thing. Buckner threw the legs on that call. Kirby Puckett's walk-off in the 91 World Series. Koufax, perfect game. Fernando Valenzuela's no-hitter, the double play up the middle to cap off Fernando Mania and the no-hitter. The catch in the NFC Championship game. Amazing. Here's Andy Reid.
So we had everybody out there that we expect to be out there. So, again, good work. Had to go inside. Had a little weather today with the lightning. So, but I thought the guys handled it well. It was a red zone day today. We've got a lot of work done there. A lot of good competition between ones against ones and twos versus twos, three versus three. So it was great competition all the way around. Anyway, so that time's yours.
How much did that alter your plans when you have to win wars like that?
Yeah, we didn't really have to change much. You know, it's a little more compact, so the individual stuff, trying to get all that done is a little different. But we've got it down. So where we can still get some good work in.
Andy, the fish is in the boat now. You've got Orlando Brown here in camp. Yeah. As you looked over the last couple of days,
that's a big fish. he looks good. You know, I know he's been working hard down in Miami, and I'd mentioned that earlier. So. Kind of keeping tabs of that as he was going, and it looks like it. Looks like he's in good shape. We're ramping him up, so we're trying to be smart with that the best we can, and give him the work that he needs. So, but he's handled it very well. Good to have him back.
Sorry, Coach. Andy, what do you want to see most when you do the one-on-ones between linebackers and safeties and running backs and tight ends, blocking and obviously doing some of the releases out of the backfield?
Yeah. So the blocking part is. One-on-one blocking, we give them some parameters that they've got to work within to get it done. But it's great for the rushers, the defense, and it's great for the backs and tight ends to work their angles as they work into that block and then their fundamentals. So it's a productive period. Then we jump in and we do one-on-one pass from there. Again, give them parameters to work in and in a clock. So we're not just going to hang on to the ball all day till they get open. They've got to do it within time. So, and again, that's good for both sides. Again, now defense working angles on that, and offense trying to set things up according to the route that's called.
And are you expecting the Carlos Dunlap out at practice tomorrow?
There's a good chance. Now, I'm going to talk to him first, and then we'll get a plan together for him to get started here. So.
Feel like that his plan will be similar to what you've been doing with Orlando?
Yeah, so I tell you, he actually works out at the same place Orlando does, so I know he's in pretty good shape now. You know, he's a little bit older, so I always keep that in the back of my mind, just like I do with Kels and the, you know, some of the older guys. We don't have a whole lot of them right now, but the older ones, I always keep that in mind and make sure we're very aware of the reps that go on.
Specifically Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson, so Spags, he
knows that position like the back of his hand. He's coached that. And then David has been doing it a long time. And then Donald's worked into that. He played safety, so he works in there. But David's working with those corners and spent a lot of time with them, as Spags is. And you can see he's got talent there. And the kids are willing to work, and I think doing a nice job competing. Yeah, he's got a little juice to him. Yeah, no, he's got good speed, toughness, all that. Look forward to getting him in a game and see how he does there. He's working hard on picking everything up and doing a nice job there.
Andy, you mentioned this in the youth earlier. That seems to kind of define a lot of moves you had on the defense. I wonder just how you would classify the group as a whole.
Yeah, no, I think the draft picks that Brett has brought in here, I think, are doing a nice job. Some of the free agent kids are showing up too. So it's we've just got to keep going. It's early yet, but I love the way they're working. They powered through these last 3 days with the heat and length of the practice is increasing every day. So I've appreciated that work ethic that they've brought here and kind of bought into what we're doing. So that's important.
Dodgers fan that you grew up, I wonder how much of part of your childhood.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Vin Scully, yeah, great guy, you know, fellow redhead, right? So you hate seeing that, but what a great career he had. I mean, you know, you watch his career kind of ramp down to, he was doing like three innings when he was as old as he was there, and still that voice, you know, that's part of the childhood right there. I grew up right below the stadium, and Vin Scully was there from the get-go, so, yeah.
Coach, we're going to talk to Justin Watson here in a little bit. And Coach Tobe talked about how good he's looked on special teams. Can you tell us a little bit about how he's looked as a receiver in the offense so far?
Yeah, so he's done a nice job. Big target, big kid, tall, fast, smart, Penn grad, right? So he's got capacity there, and he's taking everything in and working hard. So again, it's just working in the offense more and more and more. The reps that he gets are so important. He's working in with the ones, and the quarterback, he trusts them, which is a plus. But it's just a matter of more. Let's keep going. Back to back these practices, and that really goes for all the guys. The ups and downs aren't so good. You want to keep building on them. So he's been really working hard at that, and he's done a nice job.
Andy, I'll ask you about Josh Gordon. Brought in a lot of guys in that room now, new guys. It seems like his reps are going down a little bit. Let's see what he's going to
do. Yeah, Josh got a great attitude, and he's working hard. There's competition. So, I mean, they're all competing. One day he's working with the ones, the next day twos, three. I mean, he's just trying to get him as many reps as we can. So, I mean, they're all competing. One day he's working with the ones, the next day twos, three. I mean, he's just trying to get him as many reps we can and still look at the other guys too. So it's a little bit of a juggling act, but he's doing a nice job. So, yeah, working very hard.
Last one. Coach, Rashad Benton was just so key for you guys last year. I think the original timetable to start at camp. Is there optimism that we might see him before you guys break?
Yeah, he's another one that's working hard. So we'll just see how this thing goes. I can't give you an exact date, but he is progressing and he's been working extremely hard.
All right, thank you.
All right, good.
All right, there's Andy Reid out at Chiefs training camp. We'll hear from Turk Wharton. We'll hear from Willie Gay, and we'll hear from Justin Watson today. You know, just given last names of Gay, Wharton, and Watson, I thought that Watson was Jalen Watson, because I was just looking at, like, last night, Jalen Watson. There was talk of, like, oh, he's running with the ones, and it's Justin Watson, because a lot of talk yesterday about Justin Watson. But with that being said, here's Willie Gay.
You know, once again, they call me the juice man for a reason. You know, that's what I, you know, try to do every day, bring the energy, bring the juice, and it's nothing that I do because people look at me. It's just I have fun doing it and just being out there. So it's just part of who I am.
With a couple of the leaders like Hitch and Matthew leaving from last year, do you take it upon yourself maybe to fill that void and be more of a vocal leader and kind of lead by example out there?
Oh, yeah, you know, I definitely feel like my role has increased. You know, like you say, those two guys, big parts of this defense, of this team. So now, man, I feel like me and Nick both, we have bigger roles to fill and to lead this defense, to lead this team on the defensive side and just do what we need to do to make sure we are in position to lead. So,
when you are able to intercept Pat like you did today, how much confidence does that give you in coverage for the regular season and other teams?
Give me a lot of confidence. You know, I got goals to lead linebackers in the NFL in interceptions this year. So when Pat throws me some, I know the other quarterbacks will, because they're not as good as him. So, you know.
Do you ever say anything to Pat, or does he ever say anything to you?
I ain't that cocky.
Willie, you talked about your confidence going up. Guy next to you, Nick Bolton. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like his confidence is up there as well. What are you saying from him? Is he the guy standing next to you?
Oh, he runs the show, man. Since he got here last year, in my second year, we both were learning, you know, and he's took off ever since, man, and hasn't looked back, and so we both, man, just trying to take things to the next level.
A lot of rookies on this team, on the defense. How long did it take you before you felt comfortable with Spags' defensive playbook? You're in year three now. How long did it take you where you felt like you knew everything you needed to know?
you know, every day, man, we're growing and we're learning more and more. You can never be perfect, I feel. You know, that's how I take it on. And, I mean, I'm good now, of course. Like, I feel like this is going to be a great year mentally for us all, that we can execute our plays and run the scheme well. And so I feel like we're in a good spot, so we're going to do it, man.
That you want to lead the league in interceptions among linebackers,
yep.
Right? What gives you that confidence to make that goal?
Because I know I can do it. Coming out of college, man, I was a guy I feel like was drafted because of my coverage ability. And, man, like, I feel like I dropped four of them last year, you know, Cowboys, Broncos. You know, I feel a couple other teams I can say. And I feel like, man, if I make those opportunities and – you know, make the play. That's like 5-6 interceptions last year. So this year, man, I really can take it to the next level. I know that for a fact, so I'm definitely going to do that.
How much of guarding, having to guard Travis Kelce in practice helps
you? Oh, man. You know what? That's a good question, because Travis he's different. You know, tight ends don't run routes like Travis. He's patient, very slow routes, but they very efficient. So he'll make a move on you, man, and 10 seconds been passed by already, you know, so you think the play over and he hits you with a up and out or something, you know. But it definitely makes you better for the guys that you play against every week, because, once again, nobody runs routes like Travis. Nobody can throw the ball like Pat, so we get better over there, man.
Willie, from your perspective, what jumps out about this collection of running backs, whether it's a young guy like Pacheco, having Ronald Jones in camp for the first time, even seeing the progress from Jet, and CEH, what jumps out to you about the running backs?
Well, first off, TN, man, Pacheco, he reminds me of my running back in college, Colin Hill. He just got so much juice when he runs, man. I feel like he's a great addition to the room. And Clyde, you know, Jet, Rojo, all the guys over there, you know, I hope I ain't missing anyone. But it's just a great room, a room full of skilled backs that can spread you out in a pass game and run it up inside if they need to. So it's a great room.
Willie, I know that you were a little overwhelmed your rookie season. At what point did you feel like, okay, I'm no longer thinking and I kind of I'm one with the system in a sense of respect?
Really, man, it took me to year two, honestly, because, I mean, I don't like looking back, but rookie year I kind of gave up on it a little bit. I was just like, I'm just waiting my turn. So year two was when it really got going for me mentally, and my confidence level went up a lot. So ever since then, man, now we're on the up and up, so. What do I say to them?
Yeah, to like give them some confidence to stick with it.
You know what? It's a good question, man, because I remind myself of that every day, that I did come from that point, you know, and I was the rookie one day that didn't know the playbook and was, you know, felt like I didn't belong here at times. And when I see the guys, you know, the undrafted guys struggling a little bit, I tell them, we're going to get it, you know, don't cram your minds right before practice. Just stay focused, do your part, do what you need to do. You know, you're going to mess up. You can't be perfect in this game. You know, we got one of the most, you know, complex defenses in the league. So, you know, I tell them all the time, just take it one day at a time, and, you know, we'll get it as we go along. So.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. All right, there's Willie Gay. Interesting stuff there, especially at the end when he talked about year two is when he started feeling comfortable. Year one, don't want to look back and say it, but I kind of gave up on it, just kind of waiting my turn. And then year two, the confidence, the mental part of it, and then how difficult that defense is overall. We'll get into more of some things that he said. Here's Turk Wharton.
As your new defensive line coach, maybe some differences as opposed to last year?
I think Coach Cullen want me to use my speed, you know, just letting me get upfield, you know, watching Chris a lot. So he want us to go. It's kind of making me play faster than more of a read and react. So, yeah.
What are you seeing out of your new teammate, George Karloftis, I mean, especially during those one-on-one drills?
I think George a hard worker, you know. Got that rookie hard work to him, like he gonna mess up 1,000 miles, but he just go. George go, he get off the ball, and you know, showing that he's supposed to be here.
Turk, is there a different mindset going into year three for you, the idea of things you wanted to work on this summer and sort of showcase this season?
Definitely, like you know, as far as being a pass rusher, like I worked a lot on getting my hands faster, boxing, things of that nature, just to get them up. Talking to Chris and Frank, they was telling me some things they do in the off season, and that was one thing that Chris told me he did, and you know, Chris got good hands, so I just did that and stuck to it.
How much better are you today than you were when you first came in?
I think I'm definitely better coming in from a small school. You know, these guys was a little bit more polished than me, but now I feel like I belong. You know, it's more so, all right, every day I'm working to get better, and I feel like I could compete with the top guys.
Jerick, how impressive have you been with the offensive line, maybe as it's changed from your rookie season to now, and it's grew into what it is today?
I think those inside guys, Thuney, Trey, and Creed, those guys give you good looks, you know, some top guys in the league, and they're going to go all out every day. You know, they're not coming in just to get through practice. They come in and work. So, I mean, as far as my rookie year, there is definitely a leap. But, you know, the guys who was in my rookie year still give us good work. Alec Grady and all those guys still come in and work us, you know.
You guys have good one-on-ones with Trey Smith. What do you like about his game as you're going up against
him? Trey, you know, that's just been something since his rookie year. You know, in the locker room, we talking like, oh, yeah, you got me today, but tomorrow we coming back at it. And, you know, it's just a friendly competition, but we know we're going to get each other better every day.
So could you notice the difference in the way that Frank Clark has approached this season and maybe his work ethic as well as Chris Jones? It kind of seems like the two of them came into camp with the
Oh, yeah, I think that they taking a leadership role. You know, they leading us. Frank come out and he passionate about the game. So he come out, he teaching, keeping the young guys at the meetings, letting them know what's going on, watching film with them. And Chris doing the same, you know, they leaders on the field more so, you know, like they really taking that leadership role now.
Any message that was new or different from Spags, given you guys have known each other and seen what he's doing with a lot of the new guys sort of surrounding you?
So what you mean by that?
Is there any new message that you hear from Spags? About how the defense might change or the idea of what we've heard in the past compared to
I think he's keeping it pretty much the same. We 1,000 miles per hour, you know, we going. Like we got new guys in, but the culture of the Chiefs are still here. You know, we want to win. And that's what he's coming in and having us do.
Thank you guys.
Thank you all.
All right, there is Turk Wharton. Short but sweet, boxing in the offseason. Working on those hands. Chris Jones has good hands and apparently does some boxing as well. So Turk Wharton wanting to work on his hands there in the trenches. So he's boxing. Here's Justin Watson.
What made Kansas City the place for you?
Yeah, it was a challenging decision. You know, as you said, there's always been a history of great receivers here. And as a free agent in my position, you know, you want to go somewhere where there's a history of receivers, but there's also a spot for you on the team. And, you know, it was really our GM, Veach. He just spoke to my agent and just gave him a lot of confidence that, hey, if you come here, we're going to give you a chance. And that's all I wanted was just to have a chance here, and I'm grateful the coaching staff has given me that so far.
Coach Tobe mentioned you and your work on special teams and how impressed he was. Can you just talk about how you've been, you know, committed to special teams in the past and maybe how that played a role in your decision to come to Kansas City because they put such an emphasis on special teams?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean – you never want to play Kansas City when you're playing special teams. This is always a premier unit. And for sure, you know, to play for Coach Tobe and just such an emphasis, you know, the assistant head coach is our special teams coordinator. You can feel that it's important. You know, it doesn't even need to be said. You can just tell by how much time we put into it and the effort we put into it. So I love that. It's always been something that's been important to me. And you can feel it with a lot of the other guys. So it's cool after practice. We already see a lot of guys working with each other, competing, knowing that those last couple spots on the roster are going to be decided by special teams.
Patrick said he was down with you in Texas during the offseason. He actually called the GM and asked how fast you were. Just what was the rapport building like with you guys in that initial meeting?
Yeah, Pat's been awesome. You know, I signed as a, you know, futures contract, and to reach out to me and invite me in the offseason before we ever met to come down there and work meant a big deal. You know, it definitely just showed me that he wanted to get to know who I was and wanted to see what I had to do. So those first couple of weeks were fun when we were just going through meetings virtually and we were hanging out and working out. He's got a great setup down there in Texas. You know, we went back after OTAs and hopefully that can be a thing going forward.
Sounds like he called you out of the blue and you just picked it up and it was Pat.
Yeah, I just had a text that, hey, man, it's Patrick Mahomes. And so I was, you know, you don't get many of those texts during the offseason.
How long did you spend in there?
I spent 2 weeks, and then another week after the OTAs.
When you first got that text, did somebody was messing with you?
I definitely had to double check. Somebody could have got me pretty good because I didn't do anything to verify, but Texas area code was enough for me.
You have an opportunity in Tampa to work with a quarterback who also has high expectations for
something
his receivers.
Like that.
Yeah, what was your biggest takeaway from Tom Brady to now transitioning to Mahomes?
Yeah, I think, I learned a lot of lessons from Tom, but, man, every single rep mattered so much. It didn't matter if we were working on a field in the off season or if it was training camp or in the game. That same focus and attention to detail carried over to every single one. And so working with Pat, you see so many of the same characteristics. You know, it's no surprise that two great quarterbacks are so similar in many ways, and just his competitiveness and mentality. And it's cool seeing Pat continue to grow, continue to make new throws, hearing him talk through the offense. So he's a great leader. I'm really thankful to be playing with a quarterback like Pat.
Going through the offseason program, seeing the playbook, now getting the reps in camp, what do you feel like this offense, this playbook sort of features you as a receiver?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things the coaching staff said when we came in. We had all new receivers, and they were just going to let us show our abilities, and there was no preconceived notions. And so far I've been kind of the guy that's doing a little bit of everything. You know, in the offseason program, I was working on the outside, catching a lot of deep balls. And then here so far in training camp, still a little bit on the outside, but trying to see if I can work on the inside in the slot. So I just want to be the guy that if anyone needs a break, if anyone goes down, you know, shoelace comes untied, that they can point to me and say 84, go in there and pick right up where they left off.
Andy said it's pretty clear that you've already gained Patrick's trust. Can you sense that on the field? Do you feel that chemistry that's been built down in Texas and now through training camp?
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool when you start seeing plays the same way as the quarterback and things that might not be drawn on the playbook, but you both just have this feeling that, hey, man, there's an opening outside if I break my route a certain way and that Pat hits you right out of your break. So it's cool because that Pat has that ability to see the field and think past the playbook and see coverages, and so he speaks every day in our team meetings, and it makes it really clear what he wants from us at receiver.
Justin, what is he like as a teacher in that moment? How does he sort of show his personality? How would you say he describes things from his point of view that maybe the average quarterback doesn't?
He has such a great understanding of defenses, I think, is the first thing that shows. It's not just cover two, cover three. It's specific teams. How the Broncos run cover three, how the Chargers run cover three. So I think that's the first thing that stands out. He's an unbelievable understanding of the defense. But then he also knows, you know, a new guy, hey, here's the best way to explain it. If you see the far side safety crashing down, take it a little higher. You know, if the nickel pushes out to you, go inside. So he just does a great job of teaching without putting guys down, always trying to build people up, and I think that's a great leadership quality he has.
And what's it like when you have that discussion, you see it in practice, you actually go through it and sort of connect? What's that feeling like for you?
Oh, man, that's a receiver's dream when you talk about something, in the film room and it translates over onto the field. So I think the more of those things we can do keeps building confidence for game plans going forward in the preseason and the regular season.
Justin, in that wide receiver room, you have a bunch of new receivers. Who's someone that you're kind of leaning on that, you know, trying to figure out where to play, what play to play?
Yeah, you know, I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling is one that, for me, he's been a great leader. You know, we came into the NFL the same year, but he's from Tampa. I played the last 4 years in Tampa. We got to spend some time down there in the offseason, and, he's helped me become a better deep ball receiver, I think. You know, I caught a lot of those passes in the offseason, and we have similar body types, and just how he attacks routes, you know, how he attacks leverage. I think one thing you're going to see from him this year is he's a lot more than just a deep ball receiver. He's been catching balls over the middle, getting off press really well. So I think he's going to have a huge season this year, MVS.
Related to that, I mean, Marquez, you know, had the fact that he was going to get to do more things and be asked to do more here. It was a big deal. Do you kind of feel like that same opportunity, that maybe you're going to be asked to do more than the Chiefs, maybe an opportunity to do in Tampa?
Yeah, that's what was great when we came in, and there was, you know, they didn't put anybody into a box. You know, I thought my time in Tampa, I spent a lot of time in the slot, and I would have liked to run some more deep balls. And so coming here and in this offense, man, all we do is run deep balls. So I've been loving the chance to get out and run, stretch my legs, and just run some routes that, you know, I maybe haven't ran since college. So I definitely, absolutely.
Can you say that deep ball threat is your strength then?
Yeah, well, it's becoming that. You know, I think, body type, you know, weight size, a lot of people don't expect me to open it up and go deep on them. So I think our DBs have learned, and hopefully we'll be teaching some other DBs going forward in the regular season.
You mentioned how Patrick can extend plays, get creative. How much does that change your mindset when you're out there that you never give up on a route, never give up on a play, because he can make things happen long after other quarterbacks can't?
Oh, my gosh. It's so different. You know, there was a play in the film room. I was on the backside, and I was like 50 yards downfield, and I started slowing down because most quarterbacks can't make that throw across the field. And they said, hey, keep accelerating. If you're open, he'll find you. And sure enough, we've hit a couple of those already. So it's different. That doesn't matter how deep you are. If you're open, he's going to find you, and that's the truth.
Patrick says you're fast. Who on this team is faster than you?
On this team, I'm going with all the speed in the receiver room. So I think MVS and McColl, MVS McColl would be a great race for who's the fastest on this team.
All good?
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Don't tell that to McColl. That McColl will take offense to that. He would take offense. McColl is the fastest receiver on the Chiefs once Tyreek Hill left.
Put a race on for the group in St. Joe. I'm sure the fans would enjoy that.
Well, they did with Tyreek and McColl Hardman. And Tyreek whooped him to the point that McColl just sort of slowed up the last 5 yards, kind of jogged, like, I'm not really taking it seriously. That was interesting stuff from Justin Watson, man.
It really was.
I like that. There's some things I want to get into and talk about from that.
Me too.
I feel like there's a theme developing with wide receivers in the offense, the newer wide receivers in the offense, of how they are utilized versus other offenses they've been in the past.
Yeah.
Where that be specifically Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Tampa, where MVS, Juju, and Watson played their entire careers with one team and now coming to the Chiefs. So that's three different organizations and how they do it versus how the Chiefs do it. We'll get into more about that as well.